Very simple, by accident. I've always had a keen interest in radio and in music. And when I was growing up, Radio Luxembourg was my radio station of choice. And many is the night I would be in my bedroom listening to Radio Luxembourg, and my poor mother and father, Lord have mercy on him, would be banging on the floor for me to turn down the radio. So I've always had a keen interest in radio, and I play a bit of music. And at the time, back in the early 80s, I actually played drums in a band. And one of the guys that was in the band with me was involved in a pirate radio station in my hometown of Carrick-on-Shore. Now, as the drummer, I didn't sing, but I used to do the announcing. I was the MC. So basically, I was the guy that used to say, thanks very much, your next dance is coming right up and we'll take a break here, that kind of thing. So he asked me would I get involved in the radio station, the local radio station in Carrick-on-Shore, which I did, Radio Carrick in Carrick-on-Shore. And that used to close down at 7 o'clock in the evening. So I would go up after 7 o'clock and mess around in the studio. And one day the main man of Radio Carrick knocked on my door and said, I need to go to Dublin. Can you do my show for me? And I said, I can, of course, because I was young and cocky. So I went in and I did the show and I loved it. And I recorded it and I listened to it and I heard so many mistakes and so many things that I wanted to change in my first show that I couldn't wait to go back and do another one. And then I just got bitten with the whole radio bug and actually made a fine career out of it, I'd have to say, in the finish.
So Radio Carrick, I know, was on in around 1981 is the earliest date that we have for it. And as far as I understand, it merged then with CBC in Clonmel at a later stage. Is that correct?
Well, there was a local radio station in Clonmel as well at the time. I think it was CLR, Clonmel Local Radio. If I'm not, I might be wrong about that. But Clonmel had a local radio station, and Carrick-on-Shore had a local radio station. There's only 12 miles apart between the two towns. So what was decided was that they would combine, and from those two stations emerged CBC, which was based in the bigger town of Clonmel for commercial reasons, to be quite honest with you. And that's how CBC came about to be formed.
And what did CBC stand for?
Well, that's a good question. None of us are quite sure on that. You could say Clonmel Broadcasting Company, Carrick Broadcasting Company, or maybe it was called after a jingle package that we had. I'm not quite sure.
Sometimes radio stations call themselves after their jingle packages, indeed.
Absolutely. Get the jingles first, and that dictates the name of the radio station.
But CBC was a bigger operation that carried on until the end of 1988. So what kind of an impact did that make on Clonmel and the surrounding part of South Tipperary?
It had a huge impact. CBC at the time became part and parcel of the whole area. It was on medium wave, obviously, at the time, and FM. It was on FM in Clonmel, but it was on medium wave in the greater South Tipperary area. In the first year that CBC came on air, there was a desperate snowstorm hit the area. And CBC kind of became the social media of its day for connecting people in the area during the snowstorm. This was particularly bad snowstorm around the Nyre Valley in kind of West Waterford, which would also have been served by CBC, because Clonmel, of course, is bordering Waterford. And around the Nyre Valley, helicopters had to be flown in for feeding animal stock and all the rest of it. And CBC was really involved in a lot of stuff at that time. And pretty much because of that snowstorm at the time, it kind of put CBC on the map in terms of as a communications or media company. And it became a pretty much important part of life in the region throughout the 80s, I'd have to say.
And I think that's a theme that's shared with many other pirate stations that were on in the during that snowstorm period, that many of them put down deep roots in their community as a result. Paul, you spoke in another interview that I did with you for Wireless on Flirt FM about the creativity that was inherent in the pirate radio era and the experimentation that was possible. Can you give us a sense of how that played out in CBC and in other stations where you worked?
What you must remember, the most people that were working in pirate radio in the 1980s had no experience. There was no courses. There was nowhere you could go to get direction. So basically, you pretty much had to learn on the hoof and make things up and make your program unique as well. In a lot of radio stations, like not so much in the city stations now in Dublin, that where they were quite organized and they had program controllers. In a lot of pirate radio stations, you've effectively had a station manager. And the station manager was everything, but not necessarily a programming background. So somebody could come into a radio station for whatever reason and could end up doing a program fairly quickly. And basically you were told, here's where the records are. Here's where you sit. This is the microphone. This is how you turn it on. Now knock yourself out. So you had to learn and you had to be creative. And there was so many really, really good people that work in radio in Ireland today that came through the whole pirate era, but are self-taught in terms of how they do their jobs, how they present their programs. And even things like features and different structures and programs and putting programs together, people went off and they did research. And a great place to look at that time for what you should be doing was Australia or New Zealand. Everybody looked towards Australia and New Zealand for ideas. Then you got these ideas and you adapted them yourself, but you did it all on your own. So you had to be creative because your program had to stand out. It had to be different to the programs that were on before you. And it had to be different to the program which was coming from the building next door where there was a different radio station as well. So it encouraged people to step out of their comfort zone, be different, try different things. Not everything worked, but everybody had scope and room and were encouraged to try things anyway. Right.
And why was there an interest in Australia and New Zealand? And how would you get that information in a pre-internet age?
Well, basically, the story with New Zealand and Australia was they were deregulated at the time. And for example, in New Zealand, you could have a situation where not only would you have a town that would have a radio station, but each street could have one as well. And so it was extremely competitive. And basically you were asking people what was going on in Australia. You were looking for contacts to record programs that are over in Australia, New Zealand, and these places, and America as well, I'd have to say. But for some reason or other, Australia and New Zealand were fairly important in terms of ideas for program content, for competitions, for formats, and for music content, because it was so competitive over there. So if you knew somebody going to Australia, you give them cassettes, you ask them to record stations to bring them home with you. You search through shortwave looking for, could you find radio stations that you could listen into and stuff like that. And a lot of ideas, what you had to do then, you took an idea that was popular someplace or a competition that was popular someplace and you adapted it and you changed it to suit your own local market as well. And everybody had to do that on their own. There wasn't a cast of thousands. You didn't have producers and researchers. You were on your own when you were doing a program on pirate radio, and everything that you did it on your own.
Very interesting. And we also have a recording in our archive of Centre Radio, which was an offshoot of CBC, a more youth-oriented station. And I think you, in fact, set that up.
I did indeed. Yeah, I set up Centre Radio for my sins back in the day, back in the pirate days. I had gone from CBC to work in Mallow with a station called NCLR. Back in the early 80s, I did a year down in Mallow. I was there at the time when the famous Mexican pilot landed his airplane on the race course in Mallow. If you often watch Reeling in the Years, you'll see that on the news.
Yes, so I've seen the footage.
Yeah, I was there. We broadcast that, and I can tell you a story about that too. But when I came back then from Mallow back to Clonmel, I just thought there was an opening for something different in Clonmel other than CBC. I'd moved on from CBC. I had been down in Cork. There was a number of big pirate radio stations in the city in Cork, which broadcast into Mallow as well. So we were listening to ERI and South Coast Radio as well, which were very, very slick pirate radio stations of their day. And sure, I came back from Cork anyway with notions of setting up a station like that in Clonmel, and that's where Centre Radio came from.
And that in turn then changed into Premier Radio, I think.
It did. I was gone at that stage, I'd have to say. I was gone from Premier Radio at that stage, but that's where Centre Radio came from anyway. I'm not quite sure when it evolved. I went from Centre Radio then to WLR, the pirate radio station in Waterford. I think Premier Radio followed after I was gone.
Okay, we might come back to WLR, but just to ask you about Mallow, NCCR, North Cork Community Radio, I think was the name there. What story did you have to tell us from that time, Paul?
Well, it was NCLR, North Cork Local Radio, but we were based at the Majestic Ballroom in Mallow. So the plane landed, and this is how local radio worked at the time. So the plane landed on the racecourse in Mallow, and obviously they couldn't take off the plane because it would cost too much to transport it to Cork, and they had to build a runway. So there was a couple of months where the runway was being built, but we broadcast from the race course the day that the plane was taking off. And we had a caravan, a small little caravan. This was like something that you'd see on Father Ted. We had a small little caravan and we were up on the roof of the caravan and we had a small FM transmitter and somebody was standing holding the aerial, pointing it over to where the main studio was. And we had a small mixer and a microphone plugged into it. And we were all standing up on the roof of this small little caravan doing a countdown. And the engines have started and the plane has started to move and it's running down the runway now and the nose is up and the tail is up and there he goes. And we did that on Pirate Radio.
Fantastic story. And of course, everybody, you must have had huge listenership because if you wanted to see it on television, you had to wait until the 6 o'clock news on RTE that night.
Absolutely. It was a huge local story in Mallow, obviously, and they had built a runway on the race course and we were there and we broadcast the whole thing live. But of course, we couldn't broadcast it. Like, it was just voice. So we were just up on the roof with a microphone, basically. And another one of the lads was just holding an aerial, pointing it over towards the studio with a small FM transmitter to get the signal back to the main studio and get it out over the main studio. You couldn't do that today. So you couldn't, you know, and you wouldn't get away with it either. So, like, I mean, it was just, those were the type of things that you had to do back in the pirate days, you know. I remember at times too, even when I was in CBC, we were on medium wave, and a medium wave aerial is quite big. We were on 362 medium wave. So there's a quite a long, there was two poles with the cable along stretching from one to the other. But when it snowed, those cables used to have snow gathering on it and you'd have to go out and try and get the snow off it in case the weight of the snow snapped the cable and then you were in real trouble. So all of these things we had to do, and it didn't matter whether you were a presenter or whether you were the station manager, everybody had to put on a pair of wellingtons and go out and do the job.
It was literally all hands on deck. Your last station then, Paul, I think was WLOR in terms of the Pirates, am I correct? The Pirate WLOR?
Yes, yes.
So what were you doing down there?
My job with WLOR was very simple. I was presenting a program. I did a program on WLOR for a number of years back in the Pirate days. WLOR was a fantastic radio station for me to go to after spending time in Mallow and Clonmel and that. Insofar as the first time that I went to WLOR, when I went in, I met the boss down there at the time, Des Whelan, who's still there today, he's the managing director. And there was a lady called Denise Wall, who was in charge of programs. They had a program controller. I'd never met a program controller before. This was a new experience. So the day I went down to meet them, I was presented with a one-page document. And they said to me, this is the program that you would like you to present. Have a look through it and let's discuss it and see what you think. So professional setup, that's the way I would put it. So I spent a number of years with WLR until 1989 when it closed down. And then once it became legalized and it was the only pirate to retain its name after it came back on air, I went back and worked there for a number of years again once it was legalized. But WLR was a very different operation to a lot of the local radio stations around in the 80s. It was a very professional setup, and it was a great step for me to take at the time. And the difference between working in WLR as the pirate and working in WLR as the legal entity for Waterford City and County was very minimal. There wasn't much change.
That's very interesting. And obviously their professional attitude all along had set them up very well for getting the license. So just finally then, Paul, looking back at that era, it's more than 30 years ago now, what do you think it all meant? And do you think, did it change Ireland?
Oh, I definitely think it changed Ireland. There's no doubt about that, because there was a huge degree of, let's call it, freedom of expression or back in the pirate days, where people could say things, people could express themselves. You must remember that before the pirate days, like, we really basically only had RTE Radio 1. And the only time that you got kind of some, even, you know, modern music on RTE Radio at the time was some of these sponsored programs. Larry Gogan might be doing, I don't know, the Jacobs program or whatever, for 15 minutes, which was kind of, you know, pop music, as they called it at the time. But that was all you got. But suddenly pirate radio stations exploded on the scene. It gave young people their voice. It gave them confidence as well. And it was all part of a changing Ireland. If you remember Ireland in the 1980s, it's a pretty dismal place. But pirate radio kind of steadily grew throughout the 80s. And then obviously radio was legalized in the late early 90s. And of course, it was shortly after that that we started the boom times as well. So I think radio had a really important part to play in how Ireland and the young people of Ireland, particularly in the 80s, developed and give the confidence and the freedom to express their opinions and their views.